It's Living the Bream with host of Fox News at Night, Shannon Bream.
This week on Living the Bream podcast, we are excited and honored to have a special guest that I think really will have something for everyone out there, no matter where you are in your life right now. Carrie Newhoff is an author and speaker, among many, many things that he does and does well. His most recent book, Didn't See It Coming, Overcoming the 7 Greatest Challenges That No One Expects and Everyone Experiences, I think will have something for everyone out there. And so, Carrie, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Shannon. Really glad to be here.
You know, when I started reading the book, I love the premise that we're all going to be caught off guard at some point by these things. But, you know, you studied and know people well enough that, you know, a lot of these are going to be common to a lot of us. And you talk about, I love the first chapter, Find Me a Happy Lawyer. And you talk about your transition, as I did, from being a lawyer. I mean, it's a great job, it's a great career, but there comes a point in your life where you realize maybe you have a specific passion that you're not pursuing. And people they're timid about that. But a lot of people find that they get into that place where they do become cynical about life, maybe about their career and other things. And that's sort of the launching point for the book.
Yeah, it is. I did work in law in my 20s. That's what I trained for, met my wife at law school. But I was just shocked. I mean, I'm an optimist by nature. Everybody sort of either tends toward optimism or pessimism. And I kept my optimism when I was in law, but I was just shocked at the number of people who kind of had everything, but on the inside they really felt empty. And it made me realize what a widespread issue cynicism was, even as a young leader just starting out.
So you talk through each of these problems, and we'll try to hit on a couple of them, but you also talk about tackling that and kind of getting through that. And in the chapter that coincides with the other one, where you start off, is kicking cynicism in the teeth. So how do we begin to do that in our lives if we spot that we've really kind of found ourselves in that spot?
Well, I think you've hinted at it. The first thing is to realize, I've gotten cynical. And I think that cynicism and age are frequent companions. So I would challenge any listener to think back to themselves at, say, 18, and ask yourself this question: am I more optimistic now than I was at 18? And I think most people would say no. And if you think back to your 18-year-old self, right, like graduating high school, nobody writes in their high school yearbook, "I hope to be cynical, jaded, and bitter by the time I'm 35. But it happens all the time, right? Like, you don't like your job, your marriage is, it's not so great, you're a parent maybe, but your kids get on your nerves, your friendships aren't what they used to be, and you're not very excited getting out of bed every day. And you start to, I think the worst part about cynicism is that it sort of casts a pall over all future situations. You're like, I know how that's going to work out. Or, I feel like I've seen this movie before. I know how it ends, you know, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And that's like, that is cynicism. And so I think it starts with recognizing that this is where I am, but it's not where I have to be.
Yeah, because you talk about, you give an example there of the way it happened in a personal relationship that you had. And when you were really hurt by these people, then you start to, some people withdraw or think it's not worth investing or being that vulnerable in relationships or reaching out to people, because the more vulnerable we are, the more apt we are to potentially be hurt by someone or by a situation. And you talk about how we kind of wall ourselves off, and that leads to building up of the cynicism or the loss of hopefulness or the dreams in our life, because we feel like, as you said, well, I've seen how the story ends. I know what happened. So how in the world do we turn that around?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, for myself, I'm a Christian. I actually went from ministry, or from law into ministry. I think the gospel is the ultimate antidote to cynicism. You know, you think about our world. You report on it every day. And there's not a lot of hope. There's not a lot of hope in the news. There's not a lot of hope in life. To quote, you know, a famous philosopher, life is harsh, brutish, and short. And I think that's true, except for the fact that it doesn't need to be. And so I think the gospel kind of breaks through into my life when I realized, gosh, this is the thing I'm actually teaching weekend after weekend, but I'm not living it. And I had to call myself out on the carpet and remember that there is a hope. We know how this ends. It's not as brutal as we think it is. There is hope at the end of the day that doesn't fully depend on us. So I think there's that. But then on a really practical level, Shannon, curiosity has been a great friend of mine over the last decade plus as I've tried to reclaim my optimism, because I noticed something, because I burned out when I was around 40. And on the other side of burnout, I started to notice, and see if you can notice this as well, cynical people are never curious, and curious people are never cynical. If you mm-hmm. start to run that as a filter through your life, you'll begin to go, yeah, the curious people I know, you know, that uncle who's always asking questions, or that teacher who's like, hey, what's new and exciting in your life? Really? That's wonderful. I'm so excited for you. Wow, how do you think that's going to work? Like, they're always curious, or even the person who has a million questions, they're always curious. And what I've discovered is that a daily hack to sort of guard against cynicism creeping back in is, if I stay curious, I am less cynical. And so I want to be the person who asks questions. I want to be the person who says, tell me more, rather than rushing to judgment.
Mm-hmm. And see, I feel blessed because that's what I get to do for a living. So some really smart, interesting people like you, and leaders in politics and military and in policy. I love the idea of always continuing to learn. I joke that I would go back to school if I had an excuse. But really, I think no matter what your line of work is, or if you're in the home or whatever you're doing, there are ways to pick up a book or talk to someone interesting or go hear a lecture or Google things and find out. Like, I'm a terrible cook. But sometimes I will, you know, Google, like, you know, Idiot's Guide to Cooking or Recipes for Beginners. And I think always wanting to learn something more or having a curiosity, that's great advice. I mean, you mentioned and you touch on it, you talk in the book about burnout and kind of how you hit that place around 40. And I think people are feeling, you know, all the polls that we cover, people feel more stressed than ever. They think life is tougher than ever. Although we have to have some perspective. When I think back to the generation that went through the Depression and then those that went through World War II. And, you know, we know there have been difficult, stressful times in our country and around the world for generations of people. But people seem very, very frazzled these days. What's the difference between feeling like you're a little bit harried, you're a little bit, I don't know if I can hold this all together, and really experiencing kind of full-blown burnout?
Yeah, well, you know what hit me, it's interesting, because I think I was in varying degrees of burnout. My next book is going to be on burnout. I'm working on it right now. It'll come
awesome.
Out in just over a year and a half. And I think a lot of people, before they get to burnout, they get to numb. Mm-hmm. And numb is that feeling where you're getting up every day, you go to work, you do what you're supposed to do, you're making the meals, you're packing the lunches, you're in carpool for kids, you know, bringing your kids to school. And so you're doing all those things that you're supposed to do, but you don't feel anything anymore. You know you're supposed to be happy when you hear that your friend had a baby, but you can't feel it. So you fake it, but you don't feel it. Or you say I love you, but you don't feel I love you. Or, you know, maybe you hear that somebody got cancer, got a diagnosis, and you know you're supposed to feel sad, but you can't access those emotions. I actually think that's a form of burnout. And a lot of guys I know, and I live for years like this, you're just kind of numb. You feel like you're on a drive through the Great Plains. Everything's just flat and sterile. And that is a really tough way to live. And, you know, it's interesting that you raised the question of, 100 years ago, our grandparents' generation, because I think things, certainly, you know, we're not being bombed right now, and I don't have planes flying overhead. But you think about all the incoming that you have, the amount of information that you have to process in a day. I remember when I got email for the first time, it was 1996. And a good day, I got like 4 emails.
Right.
Well, now that's like every 4 minutes.
I miss
emails.
Those days. I like those days. It was manageable then.
100%. And I counted it up recently. I have 11 inboxes. When actually add up public and private emails, Instagram has an inbox, Facebook does, mm-hmm. Twitter does, so on and so forth. Everywhere you turn, it's just incoming. And there's so much news. I mean, it used to be you just got your news on TV. You're watching Fox News at night. It's half an hour. You bring me what happened in the day. I'm done. Well, now it's 24/7 on your phone. What do we do with all that? People just feel completely overwhelmed, and we're numbed out. I don't know what to do about the 1,500 people who just died in a landslide. I don't know what to do about the latest bombing because we're not designed to handle that much information. And I think it really leaves people numb. And so I think that's a form of burnout. And what happened to me is I felt that for many more years before it got to the point where my passion was gone. I was completely unproductive. I'm a preacher and a writer. So there are days rather where the ideas flow and other days where they don't. And when I was in full-on burnout, like I wasn't producing work of any quality, and that was pretty frightening. You know, I read a stat very recently in researching my next book. 70% of millennials, so 38 years old and younger, 70% of millennials say they have already experienced signs of burnout in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, we see similar numbers. I mean, we had something on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about all the stressors that millennials feel like they have in their lives. And, I mean, these people are gritting their teeth, a lot of them. I mean, getting up and getting through, going through the motions, having, you know, real worries about any financial future or questions about marriage and real existential crisis on a lot of daily life events.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's an awful lot of information. And, you know, they say ignorance is bliss, but I think back when I was in my 20s, you got most of your information in smaller doses.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't around you 24/7. And if you had a question, you asked someone you personally knew, and you hoped that they had the answer. And mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons you talk to a lot of 23, 25-year-olds, they're paralyzed by career decisions because they've been told from the time they were born, you can do anything, and all of a sudden they look on their phones and everything's an option. Well, how do you make a decision in that? So mm-hmm. I think, you know, we are the parents of technology, but we're also its child. And I don't think we fully understand what it's doing to us. And as you know, we are becoming a culture that's addicted to outrage. And I think that's doing something to our souls that mm-hmm. we really need to pay attention to. And I have some thoughts and didn't see it coming on how you can structure sort of what I've tried to do over the last 10 years to stay out of burnout, and so far it's been successful, is to structure my life in a way so that I live in a way today that will help me thrive tomorrow. And I talk to a lot of people, and they're like, man, it's just a busy season. I'm so busy right now. And I don't think you can live that way on a sustained basis.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's truly a busy season, it has a beginning and an end.
Right.
And most people, if you talk to them, there's no end to their busy season. It's just busy all the time.
Yeah.
And if it's a season, it's got an ending. And so I think emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually, and relationally, I'm trying to carve out and help other people carve out a way to live today that will help me thrive tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because I'll look at the calendar and say to my husband, like, these next 2 weeks are terrible. Like, we have all these things inside and outside of work. We've got travel. We've got obligations. And he just laughs now because he's like, you said that 2 weeks ago and the 2 weeks before that and the 2 weeks before that. So, I mean, I think finding balance in all of our lives is really tricky and sometimes easier said than done. But we do have to set boundaries and priorities and find a way to manage our lives so that it isn't just surviving. I mean, you're really finding meaning in your relationships and going through each day. And you talk so much about social media, and I think that that has obviously changed everything in our culture and the way that we relate to each other. You also have a chapter I found very interesting about disconnection, because we technically have more connections with people around the globe than we've ever had before, but people feel so alone and so empty.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. We've never been more connected, and we've never felt more alone. There's an interesting study I read late last year, and it was a study of, I think, 2,000 people, and they studied the generations. And you would expect, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be 70 or 80, but you would kind of think, wow, it must be a little bit lonely. You know, your kids are busy with their own lives. Some of your friends have passed away. And what was really interesting is that it was people over 70 who said of all the people surveyed, they felt the most connected and the least alone. Do you know who felt the most alone? Gen Z, teenagers.
Yeah.
95% are on YouTube every day. They're the most connected generation in history, and they feel the most isolated. And that was really interesting to me because As I processed my own life and thought about, you know, good times and bad times, and when I feel really plugged in, I realized that disconnection, it's the weirdest thing in the world, because you can have, you know, 300 friends on Facebook or 30,000 followers on Instagram and feel all alone. And more people are experiencing that. And it's this strange thing. It's like a false intimacy. It's like, yeah, I'm super connected.
Exactly.
I've got 42 texts today. But who are you really connected with? And I've found, okay, so this will be a challenge, because you sound to me, even though we've just met, from what I know of you, you're a driven person. I'm a very driven person. And I've realized, as I try to reconnect and really stay connected and grounded, that I have to live my life at the pace of love. And love has a speed, and it's slower than I am. And love has a speed, and it's slower than you are. You ever notice you can't experience intimacy in a hurry?
Mm-hmm.
It never works. You can't have a meaningful experience, a meaningful conversation, or even a romantic experience, really, that's profound and powerful, if you're rush, 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 hurry, hurry, hurry. But that's how so many of us live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got to slow down if I want to reconnect. And that's an extremely difficult message for me. There was a writer a number of years ago who said, the thing you must do if you want to connect with God and you want to connect with people is you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry in your life.
Mm.
That's challenging.
That is so profound and so simple and so good, though, because, yeah, I think all of us have a million boxes to check. And, you know, you're flying through, like you said, sort of at the speed of light, trying to check everything off, get everything done on your list and run from one thing to another. But when I think about the things that make me the most happy, you do think about being able to sit down with friends at a dinner where there's no time limit. No one's rushing you off. You can talk for 5 hours and connect with those people and think, gosh, I miss spending time with my friends and just being away from work and being away from hustle and bustle and investing in things that really, you know, at the soul level, really matter. And yeah. Making time for that.
Absolutely. You know, if you want a really good, this any listener can do this, but it's a fun little test that I ran into accidentally 2 years ago when I was finishing the manuscript for Didn't See It Coming. And you know how tiring that can be as an author yourself. Writing all day, you're like, oh. So I'd written all day. I was tired. And, you know, I don't do this all the time, but I'm like, I'm just going to put on Netflix or iTunes, find something to watch and just zone out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm scrolling through on my TV in my family room, and the algorithm gods, however that stuff works, suggest Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
What? There's something I haven't thought about since I was a kid, and I never even liked that show when I was a kid because I have three sisters. They liked it, so I'm like automatically liked it.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, I don't know what was wrong with me that day, I clicked on it. I bought the entire series. Like, binge purchase.
Just love it.
Done. Got it. Got it on a whim. And I'm like, I'm watching A Little House on the Prairie tonight. I turned on the pilot. So that show, I'm sure most of your listeners would know, but that show was filmed in the 1970s and set in the 1870s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's between 140 and 40 years old. Oh, my goodness, was it slow. Compared to TV
right.
today, you have no idea. There was no plot. It was like, hey, there's a squirrel. And that was 90 minutes. It was like peanut butter and molasses had a baby. Like, it was crazy, so slow. And, you know, we live in a superhero culture. There's explosions, jump shots, you know, boom, 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 boom. That's our movies today.
Mm-hmm.
The camera was on actors long after their dialogue was finished. You're like, move the camera, move the camera. And
right.
what that taught me was that so much has changed in the last 40 years.
It's so true. I had a lazy Saturday. I call them pajama Saturdays at my house, where if I can literally have a day where I will get up and go to bed in the same pajamas and never take them off. And I did a couple of weeks ago do this, and I actually went to the mailbox. I texted with my friend Janice Dean, the weather machine, to see if it was okay to go to the mailbox at 5:30 in my pajamas, and she said it was fine. So that's like my dream day.
You'd be right.
But I did it, and luckily I saw none of my neighbors. Although they're not very judgy, they probably would have been okay with it. But that Saturday I was going through, my smart TV trying to find something to watch that's not terribly scary and violent and depressing, because I deal with that all week with the news, and it's not good, a lot of it around the world and terror attacks and that kind of thing. So I find this movie from 1990. And it had an actor that I really liked from back then, and I watched it, and you're right, the same thing. I thought, wow, they're just that car going down the road. They're really lingering on that forever. That we get it, like, move along. I just, it just seemed like it was in another universe.
90.
I know, that's only 20, 30 years ago.
It is, and you look at that, and it's interesting. And again, you don't even have to bring evolution or anything into it. Just think about the centuries and the millennia that have gone by. All humanity has moved at a much, much slower pace than we have and dealt with far less information than we have. That's what you're dealing with every single day, and you're trying to process things at a million miles an hour. No wonder you're exhausted. No wonder you're numb. No wonder. And so what I've learned to do to really get my soul feeling good again and to get my relationships healthy again is I've had, as a driven leader who writes books and speaks and flies and, all that stuff, I've had to carve out space just to be still, just to slow down. And, oh, my goodness, when that happens, great things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such good advice. It's jam-packed in this book. Didn't See It Coming, Overcoming the 7 Greatest Challenges That No One Expects and Everyone Experiences by Kerry Newhoff. And by the way, as he mentioned, he's working on his new book. The next one out will be about burnout. I think in 2019, or if it comes out in 2020, there couldn't be a more timely topic for all of us. In the meantime, we have this great book to hold us over until then. Kerry, thank you so much for joining Live in the Bream. It's been an honor to have you.
Shannon, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all you do to make the world a better place.
We try. Thanks, Kerry.